Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Use the phone. There's a hotspot. That works. Pretty good. I'm very proud of myself.
Good. All right, Alexander Wynn, if you can see me and hear me, can I get you to unmute your sound and turn on your camera on the Zoom call, please?
Yeah.
Sir, you can hear me okay?
Yeah.
All right, sir, I'm going to do this outside the presence of the jury, then I'm going to do it again once I get the jury back in here. Can you raise your right hand for me, please? You swear to tell the truth, whole truth, nothing but the truth?
Yes, I swear.
You can put your hand out. Can you please state your full name and spell your full name?
Alexander Blake Wind, Alexander Blake Wind.
Mr. Peterson, are you able to hear Mr. Wynn and see him?
I can.
And Mr. Wynn, were you able to hear Mr. Peterson's response to me, and can you see him?
Yes.
Okay, state, anything you need me to address before we bring the jury back in?
No, Judge.
Defense, anything? No. Okay, please bring the jury back in.
His memory. Is there a way to turn the screen off while we share, so that the jury can't see the Zoom screen while Aaron shares?
There is not.
Okay. In that case, would the court grant me some leeway in refreshing his memory?
I guess we'll just see how it goes.
Okay.
Testifying on Zoom is less than ideal.
Okay.
Jurors entering. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Come on in. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Come on in. Once you're back in those same seats, you may be seated. All the parties may be seated. Ladies and gentlemen, those of you using the notepads, I will give you a moment to get the notepads back out. All right, ladies and gentlemen, when we took our quick break, we were in the middle of the defense presentation. We're going to resume at that point. Again, the next witness will be appearing through the use of the technology. Defense, when you are ready, you may call your next witness.
Thank you, Your Honor. The defense next calls Alexander Wynn. Alexander Wynn.
Mr. Wynn, can you raise your right hand for me, please? Do you swear to tell the truth, whole truth, nothing but the truth?
Yes, I swear.
You can put your hand down. Can you please state your full name and spell your full name?
Alexander Blake Wind, Alexander Blake Wind.
Mr. Iglash, you may inquire.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Mr. Wind.
Good morning.
Do you prefer that I call you Alexander or Mr. Wind? Up to you.
Alexander is good.
Okay. Alexander, you and I have met once before, remember, when I took your statement? Yes?
Yeah.
And we did it over Zoom, correct?
Yes.
And that's because you were in school at the time, in college, correct?
Yes.
And what school were you going to?
I go to Penn State.
Are you still at Penn State, or have you graduated yet?
I just graduated in May.
Oh, congratulations. What was your major?
I studied musical theater.
All right. Hoping to see you on Broadway, yes?
Yeah, that'd be the goal.
Okay. Did you ask me to accommodate you by Zooming you in as opposed to you flying in to be here today?
Yes.
Okay. Now, back on February 14, 2018, just before the fire alarm went off at Marjory Stoneman Douglas, do you remember what classroom you were in?
Yes, I was in the drama class.
And who is the teacher?
That would be Mrs. Hertzfeld.
Do you recall what room she was in?
710.
Is that the same classroom as Ruby and Perry Harris? Do you remember them being in your class?
Yes.
All right. And what happened when the second fire alarm of the day went off in the afternoon?
The second alarm went off, and we sort of stayed in class for a little bit because there had just been one that went off earlier in the day. We didn't know if it was a false alarm. And then after like a minute or two, we went out. I went out of the class, and then we sort of were facing the 1200 building. And then I remember seeing Greenleaf and Peterson on a golf cart sort of come up to the 1200 building. They yelled, I remember Greenleaf yelling, go back, go back. And then turned around to go back to the class. And then I remember hearing the gunshots.
Approximately where were you positioned when you heard those gunshots?
A couple feet outside of the classroom. There's like a grassy area in between my class and where the 1200 building is.
Uh-huh.
I was there.
Can you estimate approximately how close you were to the 1200 building?
Probably about 30 feet.
And when you heard the sounds, did you immediately identify them as gunfire?
No.
What did you think you were hearing?
I thought a bomb. I had exploded in the gym.
Did you think it was one loud noise or multiple noises at once?
It sounded like multiple noises.
But your words, a bomb, correct?
Yeah.
And could you tell where it was coming from?
No.
Did you have an idea generally where you thought it might be coming from?
No. I initially thought it was the gym.
Okay, but you weren't sure even of that, correct?
Yeah.
Yes, you were not sure?
Yes, I was not sure.
Okay. And are you familiar with whether there is an echo in the area that you were at?
Yeah, sometimes it could echo.
Explain for the jurors what you mean.
Like if you drop a textbook outside the hallway or something, it would make a loud noise throughout the whole hallway.
What about the configuration of the buildings allows that echo to occur in that area?
It's like a tall building and then an open space and then another tall building. So, yeah.
Did you ever think when you heard what sounded to you like a bomb that the shots were, or the noise was coming from the building in front of you, the 1200 building?
No.
Okay. And did you think that the sound was contained within a particular building or outside, or you weren't sure?
I wasn't sure.
Okay. I wish you the very best. Thank you. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Cross-examination. Go ahead.
Hello. Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. So you'd never heard gunshots before this day, correct?
Yes.
So you had no familiarity with what an AR sounded like. Is that
yes.
right? You hadn't taken annual classes where you were exposed to the sound of gunfire.
Yes, that's correct.
And you had never taken a combat lifesaver class, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
You'd never taken classes on rifles or how to use them, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
You didn't have an annual qualification where you shot off guns every year, correct?
That's correct.
Now, on that day when there was a code red, everybody had a role to play, right? Students were instructed that their role during a code red was to hunker down and find safety, correct?
Yes.
And teachers had a role as well, correct?
Yes.
And the point was that you were to stay put and be safe and wait for the police to come and rescue you. Is that correct?
Yes.
Now, you said you heard multiple shots. It was actually like 6 to 7 sounds, correct?
Yeah.
And you initially thought that it was coming from the gym, but you actually used your common sense and looked over and at some point determined that the sound wasn't coming from the gym, correct?
Yes.
Can you explain for the jury the process you took to come to that common sense realization?
Yeah, so when I was running back into my classroom after I heard the initial noise, I sort of thought it was coming from the gym. And then as I was running back, I looked over to the gym and saw that from my initial thought of the bomb, you know, it was still intact. There was nothing to my eye that would have made it seem like a bomb exploded after I looked over at the gym and saw it.
So you didn't just rely on sound. You also used your vision to confirm with what you were hearing, if it made sense, correct?
Yes.
And you knew to do that at what, the age of 16 or 17?
Yeah, I was 17.
Do you remember learning that Officer Peterson, in your words, wasn't doing anything?
Yes.
Yeah, what's the legal objection?
Calls for speculation, calls for legal conclusion, interfered
yeah.
with the...
That's sustained as to calling for a conclusion. Go ahead, Ms. Gomes, ask your next question.
How would you describe where Deputy Peterson was standing?
At the end of the hallway, in the closest to the parking lot of the 1200 building, but sort of still by the 700 building.
And just for clarification, did you see this yourself or was this what your teacher told you?
No, my teacher had told me when we got back into the classroom.
Okay. I have nothing else.
Based on that, any redirect?
Yes.
The total time that you saw my client, Scott Peterson, was what, a second, maybe two?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. You have absolutely no idea what he was doing when he was on the scene, correct?
Yes.
You don't know who he talked to, you don't know what he was directing, you don't know anything, correct?
No.
Okay. And when you glanced over at the gym, the only reason why you thought it wasn't coming from the gym was because the gym had not imploded, correct?
Yeah.
And when you looked at the 1200 building, was there anything about the 1200 building that would have suggested that there was a shooter killing children and adults in there?
No.
You didn't see any blood or any bullet holes or kids running from the building, correct?
No.
Okay. Again, I wish you the very best in your career, sir. Good luck.
Thank you.
Based on that, any recross?
Just one question, Judge.
Go ahead.
In that moment, were you looking to see if there was any blood or children, or were you just running to safety?
Running to safety.
Was that your number one priority in that moment?
Yes.
Okay, nothing else.
Is the witness excused?
Yes, sir.
All right, sir, you are excused. I'm going to end the Zoom meeting at this point. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, defense, you may call your next witness.
Thank you, Your Honor. The defense calls Deputy Arthur Perry. Arthur Perry, please.
If I could have you come all the way up here to the witness stand, please. Once you reach it, but before you have a seat, if you could just stop and look at me, please. Raise your right hand. Swear to tell the truth, whole truth, nothing but the truth.
I do.
Please be seated. And Sir, once you're seated, if I could just scoot that chair forward as far as it will go. Can you please state your full name and spell your full name?
Arthur Perry, A-R-T-H-U-R-P-E-R-R-Y.
Mr. Igosh, you may inquire.
Good morning, Deputy Perry. How are you feeling right now?
A little upsetting for me.
Tell us why.
It was a very traumatic event in my life.
Okay, I understand that. Are you okay to help
Absolutely.
Us with understanding
yes,
what occurred and what you did?
Yes, sir.
All right, if you need a break, you let us know, okay? How long have you been a deputy?
28 years.
All with Broward Sheriff's Office?
Yes, sir.
And on the day of the shooting, where were you assigned? What were you doing?
I was a school resource officer for Park Trails Elementary in Parkland.
And how many students were at that school?
During that time, that ranged between 1,000 to 1,600 children.
Let me ask you this. Did you ever wear a bulletproof vest on campus?
No.
How come?
First of all...
Judge, I'm going to object to relevance.
No. The relevancy objection is overruled, sir. You may answer the question.
It's very hot in South Florida. We spend a lot of time outside. It's very hot. It's very uncomfortable. It's very bulky. And the sheriff's office had a policy that we could sign a waiver if we didn't want to wear a vest. We could sign a waiver, not wear a vest.
Okay. I mean, did you take a risk that there could be a mass shooting at your school and then you wouldn't have a vest on?
Yes.
Okay, but that was a risk you were willing to take, correct?
Yes.
You knew my client also prior to the shooting, correct?
Yes.
Tell the jurors about your interaction with him.
I knew him because he came up to Stoneman Douglas High School. He was assigned there. I was at Park Trails before he was ever assigned there. But
are those schools that are close to each other?
They're a little over a mile apart.
Okay. So both in the Parkland jurisdiction?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And tell us about your interaction with him.
I would assist him if he ever needed assistance on his campus. I also worked detail with him. Every football at Stoneman Douglas, I'd work the detail with him.
Okay, so you had a bunch of interactions with him, yes?
Yes.
How would you characterize his professionalism, the way that he did his job?
He was very professional. He had a good rapport with the kids. He was an excellent deputy. In fact, I think his school, he had the most arrests out of any school because he was very proactive on campus.
Was there ever a time in your interactions with him, either at school or any of the details, that you saw him wearing a bulletproof vest?
No, I don't believe he wore a vest either.
Okay. What first alerted you to the fact that there was something going on the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas campus?
I was at my school. We were conducting dismissal, and it was a little after around 2:20 or so, and I heard on the radio, shots fired. I think we have a shoot on campus, something that, that's not exact words, but something of that nature.
And did you recognize the voice?
Yes.
Who was that?
Scott Pearson.
And was that the first time that you learned that there was something going on the campus?
Yes.
Were you going to go to the campus absent hearing his voice on that radio?
No, I had no reason to go to that campus.
Okay. So what do you do when you hear Deputy Peterson make that announcement?
Well, I was standing next to my car because we were conducting dismissal at my school. I opened up my trunk. That's where I kept my vest. I put my vest on. I also had my patrol rifle. I grabbed my patrol rifle, two magazines. And I threw my patrol rifle in the front car, and I ran lights and sirens down to the high school.
It may be obvious, but why did you then put on your vest?
Well, if those shots fired, it's common sense that at that point the vest is actually going to assist me.
Okay. So how long does it take you to get to the school?
I made it to the school, I estimate, less than 90 seconds.
Okay. And where do you go when you arrive?
When I get down, I go... My school is on the corner of Trails End and Pine Island, so I went west on Trails End, south on Pine Island, and then I made a right on Holmberg, and I went west again on Holmberg.
Okay.
And by the way, when an officer announces shots fired or possible shots fired, is that consistent with your training? Are you supposed to do that?
Yes, sir.
Is there anything in your training that says you should wait and not let everybody know?
No, sir.
Is it also consistent with your training as a school resource officer to order a code red right away?
Yes, sir.
And for what benefit does a deputy order a code red? Whose benefit is that for?
everyone's benefit. So the staff and the students can know they have to lock down, okay? And not only do we lock down the classroom, but we have to lock down the whole school. There's no movement in and out of the inner or outer perimeter of the school because we don't want outsiders coming onto the campus.
Okay. Let me approach with what is Defense Exhibit F. If you can show us where it is that you arrived initially.
I arrived this location right here.
Okay, so for the record, is that north of the campus?
Yes, sir.
All right. And then where do you go from there when you arrive?
When I first arrived...
You can need the board to do it? Are you going to...
I don't know eventually, but
okay.
When I first arrived, I got on scene and Sergeant Goolsby was there.
Who was it?
Sergeant, he was a detective at the time, but Sergeant Goolsby.
Goolsby.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah.
So I get out of my car and we meet up and we go to the fence and the fence is locked. Okay.
Up to that point, by the way, other than hearing my client say possible shots fired, you're monitoring your radio, correct?
Yes.
Did you have any real-time intelligence that there was a specific location that you needed to go to?
No.
Did you know that anybody was injured?
No.
Did you know anybody was killed?
No.
What happens next?
As we're coming up to the fence, I had about 3 to 5 rounds go off very, very fast. Okay.
And when you say rounds, did you recognize...
Shots fired.
Did you know them to be shots fired?
Yes, sir. I recognize them as shots fired.
All right. What do you do with that information?
Well, I'm trying to process, trying to figure out where they came from, and I'm scanning the area to see if I can see a shooter.
You didn't just run right into the 1200 building?
I had a locked fence in front of me. We have to get through that locked fence.
Okay. Let's say you get past the fence. Would you have run right into the 1200 building?
No, because I had no idea where the shots were from.
From the sound alone, first of all, could you tell whether they were contained inside or outside?
They definitely sounded like they were outside to me.
I want to have you use the map and include every possible place that you thought the shots could have been coming from. Okay, when you hear those shots. And by the way, do you ever hear any additional shots after that?
No, sir.
Okay. So we're talking about just the initial, you said 4 to 5?
3 to 5.
3 to 5? Okay. So if you can, using your finger, kind of tell us where what was in play, what areas were in play.
This whole area here, this area, and all through here. Basically, 3/4 of the whole campus.
So 3/4 of a 45-acre campus?
Yes, sir.
And so you begin to start looking for stimuli, correct?
Yes, sir.
And that included listening to your radio intently, correct?
Yes, sir.
You're also looking, correct?
Yes, sir.
Was there anything as you're scanning the campus and you're looking, anything that jumps out at you like smoke or blood or gunshot bullet holes, anything like that that you can see?
No, sir.
So what's the next thing that you do, sir?
On the gate, the lock was inside, so Sergeant Goolsby is pulling the lock towards him so he can use his key to open the gate. And then Sergeant Heinrich, he was a school resource deputy at the time.
Yes.
He was in the parking lot with a student. And he jumps up in between cars and says, "Don't shoot. I'm an off-duty officer." Now, I know who he is, and he knows who I am, because we're both school resource officers. And I've worked the football detail at the high school for about 13 years, and his wife was the athletic director there. So I would see him all the time at the football games. And I got on my radio, but it took several times. I kept trying to key up my radio. I eventually was able to announce we have a student shot, so dispatch couldn't. But it took several times. I kept getting this bonk, bonk, bonk.
So you were delayed in making that reporting about someone being shot, correct?
Yes, sir.
How many attempts do you think you made before you were able to transmit that intelligence?
At least 5 or 6.
Let's talk about the radios. Prior to this incident, how were the radios working?
We've always had issues with the radios in Parkland. Where my school is, it's located on the north end of the city, and I've always had problems trying to key up. There's certain areas you can't go to because the radios didn't work.
And what would you do if you're surrounded by, let's say, cement? You know, what would you do to try to be able to get better reception, either hear things better or be able to transmit better?
You have to move to an area where you're getting reception.
Okay.
So you have to move away.
Did you alert people higher up to let them know that the system wasn't working properly prior to the shooting?
Absolutely. Being a school resource officer was kind of tricky because we had two sets of command. We had the district office command, and then we had the command that ran the school resource officers. So we would have, every 2 weeks, we'd have a meeting, and we would tell the command from the school resource officers that, hey, our radios aren't working, and the city of Parkland, Captain also knew we had radio difficulties. So it was well knowledge that we had difficulty with radios.
No deputies get to pick which radio system they use, correct?
Correct.
Do you have to use the one assigned by higher-ups?
Yes, sir.
And why is it important to have functioning radios as deputies?
Because we have to communicate to each other. Without communication, we don't know what each other are doing.
And what are you trained to do when you don't have the use of your radios, or are you even ever trained in that scenario?
I
could have asked it better.
One question at a time. Go ahead, sir.
Have you ever been trained where you have broken radios, where you can't use your radios?
I cannot recall any training.
That's two questions again.
Okay.
One question at a time.
Have you ever been trained where the radios are malfunctioning?
I have never received any training through our training department where we've done an exercise without radio communication.
Okay. So tell us what happens next. You are with Goolsbee, and you encounter Heinrich.
I see Heinrich, and again, like I say, I know who he is, he knows who I am, and he tells me he has a shooting student shot. Unfortunately, he doesn't tell me where the shooter is, who the shooter is, how many shooters there are, where he was last seen. He gives me no information. And I'm trying to key up on the radio, and at that point, Sergeant Goolsbee gets the gate open. So at that point, we just run past him and start heading towards the school campus.
Did there come a time where you learned that Sergeant Heinrich, you knew him from Carl Springs, correct?
Yes, sir.
Did there come a time where you learned that Carl Springs had additional information that you guys did not?
Yes, after the fact.
Okay. You learned that they had...
They had all the information. All the 911 calls on the cell phone were going to their dispatch, and we didn't receive any information at all.
And how close were you to Sergeant Heinrich to be able to have that transfer of critical information?
The gentleman behind you with the tie?
The prosecutor?
The gray suit? About that close, yes, sir.
I'm sorry, the gentleman with the red shirt or the prosecutor?
Him, waving his hand, him.
The prosecutor, you were
yes,
that
sir.
Close to Heinrich?
Yes, sir. We can make eye contact. We had eye contact.
And you know him?
I know him, yes.
And he didn't give you any information?
No, I was dressed like this the exact same day. I was carrying a patrol rifle. There was no question who I was and what I was there to do.
What happened next?
Sergeant Goolsbee and I proceed up through the parking lot onto the campus looking for the shooter. I stopped at the last car in the parking lot, and Sergeant Goolsbee went to the corner of the 1300 building.
And what happened next?
At that point, I saw Vice laying outside of the 1200 building on the concrete.
Okay. Let me show you what I've shown the state already as Defense Exhibit P and ask you if you recognize what's contained in this photograph.
Yes.
Tell the jurors what that is.
That's me behind a car, Captain Jordan, the 1300 building and the 1200 building in the parking lot of the school.
Does that fairly and accurately depict where you were positioned in the parking lot in relation to the 1200 building?
Yes. I've never seen this photo before.
Okay.
I've never seen that before.
But it's accurate.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. Judge, at this time, we move what's been previously marked as Defense Exhibit P into evidence.
Ms. Wilcox, would it be Defense Exhibit number 4?
Yeah. State, any objection?
No.
Without objection, Defense P for identification will now be in evidence. That is Defense Exhibit 4.
I'm going to show the photograph to the jurors. Tell us what we're about to see. When was this, and what were you doing?
Well, this was sometime into the incident, but at that time, I'm scanning to the west. Because when I came up on, first of all, let me point something out. When I came up on that car and I saw, I knew we had a student shot at the beginning west of me.
How did you know that?
Because Heimrich told me I got a student shot and I announced it on the radio.
Did you know that prior to seeing Heimrich and being right there with him?
No.
So you hadn't learned that there was any injuries over the BSO radio up to that point, correct?
No, I was the first one to announce that.
Okay. And then what happens?
I got up to the location you
show. Let's show them the photograph. Okay.
Okay.
So tell us what we're seeing. First of all, Perry is who? That's you, right?
That's me, correct.
And who is Jordan?
She was the captain of the Parkman office at that time.
And she's right there with you? Those are...
Yes, yes.
And what are you doing behind that car?
I'm taking cover and I'm scanning for a shooter.
And is that what Captain Jordan is doing as well?
Captain Jordan's trying to run the crime scene at that point. She's trying to make phone calls and contact people and run the crime scene.
You said trying. Tell me what you mean by trying.
Well, her radio wasn't working, and she was having difficulty making phone calls.
And so we're clear. Is this the closest car to the 1200 building?
Yeah, it's the last car in the parking lot coming this way. If you're coming from the 1200, it's the first car.
How close would you estimate you are to the 1200 building?
I'm going to say that's probably 30 yards.
Okay. And is that the... Do you recognize what's contained in this photograph, which is Defense Exhibit 1?
Yes.
What are we looking at in Defense Exhibit 1?
We're looking at the west side of the 1200 building.
So if you're in that photograph, what you're facing is this, the west side?
Yes.
And can you show us where you saw Aaron Feist, where his body was?
He was in the general area right here on the ground.
Okay. So he would have been outside of the 1200 building, correct?
Yes.
And you see his body there, correct?
Yes.
Do you then just rush into the 1200 building?
No.
How come?
Because when I also see his body up in these windows... Can they see that? Can I touch that?
I could try to zoom it in.
Well, on the building, up on the windows, I can see gunshots on that windows. And based on my position...
Which windows? Are you able to show us?
It's like great...
You want me to enable?
I would love that, Judge. Thank you.
Sir, do you see at the bottom of your screen, is there three little lines right in the middle, bottom?
Yes.
Push those.
Okay. Now what do I do?
Now you can select the pencil option, and you can select a color, and you can use your finger.
Yeah, just, yeah.
Like right, and I believe it was these windows. I'm not sure exactly which one.
Wait, it's not working. Can hit a color. Just hit one of the colors. Pick whatever your favorite color is. Okay, good. And now circle with your finger on the screen. There we go.
I believe it was these windows. I could see gunshots in those windows. And based on my angle and the fact that... Coach Feist was on the ground. I was believing that the shooter was outside west, and he shot that direction at Coach Feist, and he shot in such rapid succession that the rifle raised, and those were gunshots coming from the outside toward the inside of the building.
Now, that turned out to be completely not what really happened, right?
Absolutely, yes.
So you can get it wrong, but it not necessarily be something sinister, right?
Yes.
I mean, up to that point, do you know that the shooter's inside the 1200 building?
Absolutely not. Again, I'm considering myself in the hot zone because I just ran past a student that got shot, and I ran up to the next building, and I see another person shot outside, and I'm seeing, well, it appears to be gunshots on a window up above. So I'm thinking everything is to my west. And unfortunately, when you show me that map and you tell me the point where I'm at, you can't get the vastness of the area. The area is so big, and there's so many places for someone to hide and someone to move. It's just impossible for one or two people to cover that amount of area.
And were there any other stimuli, like any smoke that you're seeing coming out of the building?
No.
Any blood?
No.
No students running out and telling you?
No.
Had you eliminated that there could be sniper fire on the campus?
Absolutely not. could have been someone anywhere in that campus shooting.
Could you eliminate that there were people running around with guns somewhere on campus?
No, because when we're trained to think always the plus one rule. So, like, again, when I ran past Heinrich, he didn't even say, is there one shooter or there's two shooters? He gave us no information, and he had a victim right there, which he had intel that he could have gave us right on the spot to assist us.
Were there other officers other than Perry and Jordan that were taking positions of cover around the 1200 building that you saw?
Well, I'm Perry.
Strike that. Other than you and Jordan.
Eventually, a Coal Springs officer came up in the car next to me to my east.
Yes.
A Coal Springs officer came up there, and he had his weapon pointed at the 1200 building. When he did that, I focused all my energy on the west side of the campus.
Okay. Did you see that? Do you remember the name of that Coal Springs officer?
I do not know his name, no.
Did that officer go running into the 1200 building as soon as that officer got there?
No.
Did you ever see that officer go into the 1200 building?
That officer stayed there the whole time I was there. When I left, he was still there.
And you don't even know the first letter of the last name? No?
No.
Okay. And so how long do you think you remained in a position of cover this close to the 1200 building?
Well, before Captain Jordan ever got there, I was in that position in that car, and Goosby was over in the 1300 building. I was there for about 3 to 4 minutes, and three Coal Springs officers came in and ran by me. Again, they gave me no information whatsoever, and I saw them run into the 1200 building outside the door with fire squads.
Okay. So do you go then running in? Ah, naturally, this must be where the shooter's located, right?
No, because I'm thinking, based on what I saw from those shots in the window, the victim that I ran past and the victim in front of me, I'm thinking the shooter is to the west.
Okay.
And
so what reason are you thinking that they're going into that building other than to go save people and or kill the killer?
Honestly, I had no clue, and I had no way to communicate with them. I couldn't understand what was going on.
How were you feeling in that moment?
It was bad because after the fact we learned that, hey, we've got one crime scene, one incident. We have two different agencies running two different operations that aren't communicating with each other and have two different sets of intelligence. It was a total failure on both agencies, to be honest with you.
Physiologically, how are you feeling? Obviously different than how you feel now because you're calm and we're in a courtroom, right?
Oh, sure.
Describe for the jurors how you're feeling, your energy.
Everything was slowed down. My heart rate was pumping. I was sweating a lot. I was looking around.
Was there any difficulty either seeing or hearing or anything like that?
I did end up having tunnel vision because I later learned that a deputy, Deputy Hanks, ran by me and went into the building. And I never saw him. I never saw him go into the building. Never saw him run by me.
So it's possible to be looking and not see something right in front of you.
Yes.
That's what you experienced.
Yes.
You're not lying about that, right?
No.
Objection, Your Honor.
Yeah, that's sustained.
So what is the next thing that happened after you and Jordan are in a position of cover by this building? I don't know that I knew the total amount of time that you were in this position.
I'm just guessing at this point, but I'm guessing probably 35 minutes easy. SWAT ends up pulling up. You see the front of that car that we're behind?
Yes.
SWAT ends up pulling one of their Bearcats up there, okay? And they're starting to take control of the situation. But before that happened, again, I had no information about who the shooter was, what the shooter looked like, anything. Coal Springs starts evacuating the 1200 building, and they're running the kids out past me and out the exit. And I couldn't make sense of that because that's not what we're trained to do. And in fact, the shooter, we want everybody locked down, and we're supposed to go hunting for the shooter. So the kids end up exiting out that west door, and they ran out to Holmberg, and then went west down to West Glades Middle School. And then our SWAT unit comes up, and they start their operation, and they discover that the shooter had left the building and he had westbound. So the sergeant for SWAT, which is Captain Robinson now, told me to leave my position and go down to West Glades and bring all those kids up to the corner of Pine Island and Holmberg Road.
So even as the kids are running out of the 1200 building, you don't go into the 1200 building, correct?
No.
How come?
Well, because I'm thinking the shooter to the west, and I'm like, why is Coral Springs dumping all these kids out into an open field, an open parking lot, and we have no clue where the shooter's at or what he looks like? I had no information to what he looked like, who he was, she was, how many there were.
So in the 35 minutes approximately that you and Jordan are taking a position of cover by the 1200 building, did you ever on your BSO radio get real-time intelligence as to where the shooter was located?
No.
How many shooters there were?
No.
Whether there were any victims other than the one you saw?
I saw four victims, okay? I saw Coach Feist, and I saw the student that was shot. But right after the three officers went into the building, right, a fourth Coral Springs officer came with Deputy Volpe, BSO Deputy Volpe, and they opened up the door and they took out Chris Hickson and put him on the golf cart and took him out the same way that we came in, and I provided cover while they did that. Then they came back in with the golf cart and they picked up a fourth person that I saw. I don't know where they picked them up at, but they also took that person out on the golf cart by me.
You never went into the 1200 building, correct?
Correct.
When was the first time that you learned that there was a shooter inside the 1200 building?
I didn't learn there was a shooter with victims inside the 1200 building until about 7 p.m. that night when I looked on Fox News on my phone, because there was no communication telling us what was going on.
I thank you for your service. Thank you.
Okay, cross-examination.
Jessica, I just have a 2.5 break.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, real quick restroom break, same admonition as always. Please don't discuss the facts of the case, the evidence, the witnesses, or the testimony amongst yourselves or anyone else. We reach the end of the case. I'll tell you when that is. If you leave the notepads in your chairs and step in the back for me one moment, I will be right back with you. Thank you. Okay, we're outside the presence of the jury. Real quick, 5-minute restroom break. We'll be in recess for 5 minutes. So if you're comfortable, you can stay right there.
Okay.
If you want to step down, you can step down.
All right.
Don't talk to anyone about your testimony. It's just like you're on the witness stand. Thank you.
that's like seriously inflammation. And I'm speaking as a lady, do you guess that you're awesome?
No.
What was that? For us, it's actually not a short bus. It's just as long as all the other buses. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I've got things.
Mr. Klinger present for the state. I continue to have Mr. Igarsh present with Mr. Peterson, who likewise is present. We are outside the presence of the jury. The witness remains on the witness stand. State, anything you need me to address before we bring the jury back in and begin your cross-examination?
No, Your Honor.
Defense, anything you need me to address?
No, Your Honor.
Do we have another witness after this witness, defense?
No. We'll need to drop that.
Okay. I'll do a sidebar when we're done with that witness. Okay. Okay, please bring the jury back in. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Come on in. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Come on in. Once you're back in those seats, you may be seated. All the parties may be seated. Ladies and gentlemen, those of you using the notepads, I'll give you a moment to get the notepads back out.
This has been a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.